Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
This week on Truth and Movies, there's something strange in the neighbourhood in director Lenny Abrahamson's gothic chiller, The Little Stranger.
This house works on people. Girls come here like specks of grit. 10 years later, they leave as pearls.
Someone has spiked the punch in Gaspar Noé's drug-soaked dance flick, Climax. And this week's film club pick really ties the podcast together. It's the Coen Brothers' cult classic, The Big Lebowski.
Nobody calls me Lebowski. You got the wrong guy. I'm the dude, man.
All to come on Truth and Movies, a Little White Lies podcast. And we're back again. It's Michael Leader here in the host chair, sitting across from, I guess it's something of an all-star lineup today. David Jenkins, Grand Fromage of Little White Lies.
Hey there.
And Adam Woodward from Little White Lies as well.
Hi.
We have a special guest coming in for Film Club to assess what condition The Big Lebowski's condition is in after 20 years' time. But I suggest we crack on, shouldn't we? Let's get familiar with our first film, The Little Stranger. So The Little Stranger, adapted from the novel by Sarah Waters. Donald Gleeson stars as Dr. Faraday, a country doctor in the late 1940s, who is called to tend some odd goings-on at Hundreds Hall, home to the once grand heirs family who have fallen in hard times. Here's a clip.
How did you find the patient, Doctor?
Mrs. Ayers.
Mother, this is Dr. Faraday. He thinks we're brutes.
A little under the weather. I imagine she'll be quite well by tomorrow.
You'd observe a change in Betty yet. This house works on people. Girls come here like specks of grit. 10 years later, they leave as pearls.
I expect Dr. Faraday's thinking Betty won't stick it out for 10 years. These girls rather work in factories these days, and who can blame them?
As it happens, I was thinking of my mother. She was a maid here before I was born.
Well, I do hope she enjoyed her time.
So that was Donald Gleeson, Ruth Wilson and Charlotte Rampling there. David, did you enjoy your time at Hundreds Hall?
Do you know what? I did, weirdly. It's a film that's actually had a bit of a weird gestation, I guess. Just to add some context, is Lenny Abrahamson. He's the director of the film Room, mm-hmm. which ended up getting Brie Larson her Best Actress Oscar. And I think there was maybe quite a lot of anticipation as to how he would follow that film up. And I suspect he had plenty of offers because he was also nominated for Best Director himself. Mm-hmm. And there's something about this film, like within about 30 minutes, I was just thinking to myself, why this? You know, he had the key to the kingdom and he sort of chose this kind of quite sort of strange, sedate, quite dour period ghost story. And I'm watching it and just sort of trying to work out that kind of the why of it all. And yeah, it ended up sort of weirdly clicking with me in the end. I mean, he does tend to make films that do have a little bit more heft to them, and you do, you know, you have to sort of think around them more. They're maybe a little bit more conceptual and a little bit less kind of based on just kind of plot twists and simple kind of relief or simple like twist endings and stuff like that. But so yeah, you have Donald Gleeson, who I might add here just as a little kind of bit of rough tittle-tattle that I'm not a fan of him
in general.
He's a turn-off for me. He's someone who I can't think has given me much pleasure in his in his performances. I totally understand that he's well liked, and he seems to be quite ubiquitous as well. I mean, he's, you know, he's in like blockbusters and then smaller dramas like this, and then you kind of, you know, indie films as well, and he is that kind of ubiquitous character actor, and he just never quite nails it. I found him possibly the weak link in this right. film. He's the main character, this kind of country doctor. The theme of the film is in the year 1919, the sort of setup, sorry. When he was a small boy, he, from a slightly more impoverished background, there was a big fete at this big country stack, Hundreds Hall, and he was allowed to go along. And because his mother was friends with one of the servants there, he also got to like adventure into the house. And he was bowled over by the opulence. And it's a film about class, I think. And it's a film about, you know, a guy who, from a very young age, aspires to sort of raise his lot in life somehow. That kind of theme is sort of sits in the background of the film the whole time. And sort of Lenny Abrams and screenwriter Lucinda Coxon don't really push it too far into the fore. I'm sort of skirting around this idea of whether I liked it or not. I thought it was a film that I thought was good, but I wouldn't necessarily say I liked it or would watch it again. Like I thought it was really interesting, and it kind of hit me in a weird way at the end, but it was quite unexpected and maybe too subtle to really make that kind of full connection, really.
Did it make a connection for you, Adam?
Yeah, I actually think I would like to watch it again because I feel like first time around I missed something or there's maybe other things going on that I wasn't maybe paying attention to first time around. You describe it quite accurately as a ghost story, and it's got all these gothic elements, but there isn't really like a focal point in terms of it being a ghost story, there being a character of a ghost or any real like ghostly elements. I mean, he's the sort of creepy character, I guess, in the centre of it. And I think maybe he's a bit miscast because it feels like I always expect him to play these kind of roles. I always expect him to play someone who's a bit, there's something a bit off about him. So right from the word go, you're kind of expecting this twist or you're expecting him to reveal his true nature. And he kind of does in parts, but like you say, they don't really push that too much. Mm. So yeah, I didn't really get on with his character. And I think Donal is usually, I quite like him actually, but didn't think he was particularly well placed in this.
I think the weird thing about this film actually, and maybe it's sort of counterintuitive to enjoyment, is that he's pretty much a dullard. That's his kind of like key trait. I mean, he's a very sort of dull, sensible guy who doesn't show any real feelings. And like, that's great. And I think in Sarah Waters' novel, I think that kind of character would work because you can go inside their head a bit more. But on screen, it actually just comes off as boring. Mm-hmm. There are some sequences, these flashback sequences I mentioned before, where Donald Gleeson's narrating. It's one of the worst narrations ever. Like, not the text, but the delivery. It's sort of like, it sounds bored. It sounds like he's sort of phoning it in kind of thing.
He's adopted this sort of aspiring class RP accent, hasn't he?
Yes.
Which is not something you've heard from Donald Gleeson before, and it's not what you'd expect to be coming out of his mouth.
Well, I think he's playing Mr. Christopher Robin man again.
I did miss Goodbye, okay. Christopher Robin, I'm afraid.
Sorry, what's the guy's name he plays in Christopher Robin?
Is it A.A. Milne?
A.A. Milne, of course, yes. Sorry. Oops.
Yeah, I think there's just something a bit tonally off about this film as well. There's a moment fairly early on where a young child is like a gathering of people. They're sort of loosely connected to each other, but they've all got some connection to the family or to the house. And it's just like a dinner party and a child is basically attacked by a dog. Mm-hmm. But the moment it happens, I found it quite confusing. There's something quite jarring about the framing of it and the way they kind of bring in, there's like a noise, I'm not exactly sure what it is, I'd have to rewatch it to find out, but there's a kind of really chilling, like almost like dull thud noise, and I was completely baffled as to what was happening. I thought it was suddenly going to flip and there was going to be some real ghost element to it, and it sort of transpires that she's just been attacked by this dog, and it's set up in a really clumsy way, I think, that it was something like the film reaching or trying to, you know, go for this like shocking ghostly feeling. It doesn't really quite pull it off,
but it doesn't milk those moments either. Like, I quite like the fact that he teases it a little bit, you know, he sort of, the camera will sort of flick over and see her kind of scrabbling in the background while you know that something's about to happen. But then if this was on paper set out as a kind of full-bore ghost story, he would have milked that sequence for all it's worth, really.
I mean, it's not something like The Woman in Black. It feels like there's been quite a few of these types of stories on screen recently. Mm-hmm. So maybe that's why it doesn't feel particularly interesting or fresh. But, yeah, it isn't that kind of mainstream, slightly glossier version of what this could be.
So what is it? We've spoken about it on these sort of terms as a clash-conscious drama, a chilling mystery. There are also romantic elements with Ruth Wilson's character and Donald Gleeson, but a sort of sinister romance, a gothic romance. Does any of these come to the fore?
It's like an anti-ghost story and an anti-romance. and a kind of social mobility parable, all wrapped up in a sort of dude country vintage costume drama.
I don't think any of those elements are interesting enough on their own terms to really like elevate the film or make it about something more than that. It just feels like there's a lot of disparate themes or even connected themes from the novel that he's taken and latched onto and then really struggled to actually meld them into a single film.
On a more positive note, I would say that I think that it's actually really beautifully directed by Lenny Abramson. It's not a kind of cameras whizzing about, and he's quite restrained, and it really works for the material. And I also thought that the thing that really carries the film is actually the Ruth Wilson's character, who is the sort of tragic sort of heroine of the film, who is trapped in this bind between wanting to escape her past and wanting to sort of sit on the country stack and retain it for into the future, whatever that may bring to her. And she feels like she's the only one cast in the film who really sort of, you know, whose actual real person connects with the role. Like, you don't feel that she's sort of straining at all for effect. Because you've also got Will Poulter, her brother, who is a pilot from the war, who's been like, who's come back with massive scarring. He's sort of slipping into sort of mild insanity. You know, he gives a decent performance, but for him it feels like a performance, where I think Ruth Wilson is the only one who feels like she's sort of really in the material.
She's really the only normal one as well. Yeah. I think you need that character to ground it in something that feels a little bit less literary and a little bit more real. And
Right, shall we put our scores on this? In anticipation, enjoyment in retrospect. David, I'll come to you first.
Well, I would say probably anticipation was 3. Again, the Donal issue is problematic, but I really like Lenny Abramson and, you know, I'm really keen to see what he does. So 3. And enjoyment probably a 3 as well. I mean, it had pros and cons for me. I mean, it wasn't the full package, but at the same time, I think it surprised me in some nice ways. And yeah, I think a 3 as well. I mean, there's definitely stuff that is a film that you can see, and even if you liked it or didn't like it, I think you could spend some time discussing why for quite a while. You know, different people could have different reads on this material, which is always a good thing, I think.
Adam?
Yeah, I think a 3, just based on the strength of Room, and also I quite like Frank, which is Abrahamson's previous one. Possibly a 2 at the time. I just found it, as I say, quite jarring and didn't quite click with me, but maybe a 3 in retrospect. I would quite like to. There's something about it that feels like it's been left unfinished or you know. I've got this urge to revisit the film for some reason, even though I didn't particularly enjoy the experience watching it.
Okay, well, that was Little Stranger. I mean, if you want to challenge David's assertions about Donald Gleeson, you can do so at the usual channels, at LW Lies, Truth Movies.
Tell us Donald Gleeson's greatest moments.
Yes, Truth Movies, tcolondon.com or lwlies.com/podcast comment section. Please come flying in. I personally love him in Dread.
Oh, yeah, no. Dread is just a masterpiece in general. He's so also, everything and everyone in that film is good.
I think he's in one of the early Black Mirrors.
He is, right?
He's very good in that. Mm. I think since then he's tended to like play a lot of those types of quite stilted, not maybe creepy, but there's something a bit off about his characters. He's in Star Wars as well.
Yes,
General Hux. Yeah. I think he's great as General Hux. Such a good foil to Adam Driver, especially in The Last Jedi. We should move on, though. Coming up, we have Gaspar Noé's new film, Climax. So, Climax, this is the latest from the provocative Argentinian filmmaker Gaspar Noé, chronicling one wild wintry night as a dance party turns into a nightmare. The sangria has been spiked with LSD and all and sundry are sent spiralling into a psychedelic meltdown. So, Adam, you reviewed this out of Cannes. You referred to Gaspar Noé as something of a lovable rogue. Could you explain who he is and how this fits into his shtick?
Yeah, so he's an Argentinian filmmaker, probably been making films for about 20 years or so. At least since the sort of mid to late 90s, and he lives in Paris and he makes most of his films in French, most notoriously and most famously probably Irreversible, with Monica Bellucci and Vincent Cassel. I'd say that's still the one that people tend to think of when they think of Gaspar Noé. But since then he's done Enter the Void, and we were in Cannes a few years ago when his 3D sex opera Love screened there, which is quite a fun experience. But yeah, this one was back in Cannes, but in a sort of sidebar competition strand. And I don't know, I wasn't really like massively hopeful for this. I think just based on love, which is his sort of attempt to do a more earnest, more kind of like low-key melodrama, and then throw in just some gratuitous 3D shots of various genitalia. This one didn't really like appeal to me on paper. But actually, at the opening sort of 10, 15 minutes of the film, I think is some of the best work he's ever done. Basically opens in this abandoned or seemingly abandoned like warehouse dance studio. And we just have this dance troupe, and they're rehearsing, and they break into this amazing, it's this like techno house number that's sort of being played by a DJ, and the camera is basically like following them around, mostly from the kind of top of the room down on the dancers, and we're just watching them rehearse for about 5-10 minutes. Yeah, it's an amazing, really captivating, really quite enthralling scene.
And it has, in terms of the way it's shot, he's throwing the camera around, he's moving to vertical shots from above, and it's not the sort of dance sequence you'd normally see in films.
Normally you'd have like a kind of locked off shot that would just, you know, be fairly static, and this one he's really getting in amongst the dancers and, you know, flying in and around their limbs. And I mean, you watch it thinking, how the hell did they choreograph this? Because not just the actual dance sequence itself, which is amazing, but the actual, the dynamic camera movements and the way they've actually like put it together. And then eventually you just stop caring and you kind of lose yourself in it a little bit. Definitely like opens with a real bang and sort of tails off a little bit, even though it gets more crazy and more intense.
Right.
Loses some of that energy and some of that intrigue, I think.
David, are you in the pocket for Gaspar?
No. I think it's funny that it's called Climax, because I totally agree, because like a climax would infer that it kind of like crescendos to something big at the end, whereas actually the reality is it kind of, the big thing happens right at the beginning and then it sort of diminuendos. I don't know, is that the opposite?
It's a sort of premature ejaculation, isn't it?
Exactly. So and for me, yeah, it kind of, it's a big explosion at the beginning. In fact, that element of it made me dislike the film more, because I think it filled me with so much false hope. I was watching it for the first 10 minutes with this extraordinary dance sequence, which is like something out of like Singing in the Rain or something. It's proper kind of, it feels like he's doing some kind of modern riff on the kind of classic era MGM musical. I was like slack-jawed watching this thing. That scene stops, and then the story kicks in about the spiked punch, and it just lost me. It turned from this very kind of rigorous piece of filmmaking into this quite kind of slapdash, improvised kind of mayhem. You know, just the camera floating around. I mean, he does this thing in quite a lot of his older films. He's sort of developed this thing. I think he calls it like the ghost cam. You know what I mean by that?
Where sort of sort floating of like, camera?
Yeah, sort of. In Enter the Void, it was literally like this young teenage guy is shot, and then the rest of the film, like 2 hours of the film, is then viewed from his ghost floating at the top of a room, looking down on a room. And he sort of films a lot of this in that kind of ghost cam. So, you know, there were no characters. There was, you know, it was really difficult to understand motivations and what, you know, I know looking for logic in a film like this is just like a fool's errand, but on that sort of, you know, level of pure kind of visual exuberance, I just couldn't really connect to it. Just as a little detail, the film opens with all the characters like doing a kind of audition tape, like just talking about themselves and why they want to be in this dance troupe, and it's quite a kind of fun, cute little opening. It's seen on a TV screen, like a kind of old tube TV screen, and sort of stacked either side are VHS tapes that they're all his like films that he references in all his movies. So you got Salo in 2001, and you've also got this film Possession by Andrzej Zalewski. And I think one of the things that happens in the film, although you're meant to think it's just a funny joke and he's just put all these kind of like, you know, canonical art house films stacked up against this TV, I think he also is kind of, he drops in little references to quite a lot of them as well throughout the film. So it's kind of, the film is also a sort of spot the reference kind of thing. And on that level, I didn't even like it on that level, really.
It doesn't rise to those films, do you think?
No, not really. I mean, it's interesting what you're talking about, the sort of camera work, that ghost cam, and I think he's desperately trying to convince you that it's really loose and spontaneous, but actually, even later on in the film, it is obviously quite staged and choreographed, I think the camera's intended to sort of mirror the characters' fractured psyches as they get more and more, I guess, you know, this trip gets worse and worse and worse, basically, that they're on. And it just becomes quite disorientating and quite deliberately so. And, yeah, it just loses a bit of something there, I think.
It's not one for people who are prone to motion sickness.
No.
There's a long stretch, it's not a spoiler, where the camera's upside down doing the ghost cam floating through a scene, and it's probably not the intended effect to make the audience want to leave and throw up somewhere, but I'm sure he'll take it.
There's a really interesting interview I read with Sophia Boutella, who's one of the... Mm-hmm. I guess she's the lead in the film.
She's the only name actor, I guess, in the film. She was in The Mummy and Atomic Blonde. She's been in quite
a lot of things. She comes from a dance background, so, you know, it makes sense that she's in this film. The film was shot in 15 days, which is, like, you know, very short amount of time. And the days were very intense. They would come in the morning and they would do a four-hour... warm-up dance training session, and then they would spend the afternoon shooting, and apparently every take was done sort of 15, 16, 17 times. So one thing you can say about the film is it's high energy, you know, the actors are giving it a lot, so, you know, it must have been quite an intense shoot. But I don't necessarily think that kind of creative intensity necessarily yields something that I found that satisfactory.
Let's put some scores on this. Is this a trip worth taking, Adam?
I think it is in some ways and not in others. I mean, it's one of those films that... I think this is true of a lot of cinema generally, but it's very difficult to convey the experience of being on, I mean, in this case, acid, but any kind of drugs. I can't name many films that really capture that experience accurately. I think it's a very hard thing to translate. And he does an interesting job of showing how different characters kind of react and respond to it. But I would say it's, like, not one of his, like, better films.
Right.
I was probably more excited than I had been for Love, which, like, wasn't that excited. Mm-hmm. So I'd say, like, maybe a 3 in anticipation. I think I gave it a 3 in enjoyment and a 3 in retrospect as well.
David?
I mean, I think that for him, I would say sort of maybe like a 4 in anticipation, because I think at the very least, I think even though I don't always like his movies, I feel that he's going to shock me or he's going to do something. Like, I mean, I really didn't like his film Enter the Void, but at the same time, I was like, at least he's trying to do something new. You know, he's trying to sort of talk in a new language. So, you know, I'm always hopeful that he's trying to do that, and I think that is the one thing that maybe connects all of his films, this sort of attempt to try and at least visualize something a bit different. So yeah, probably a 4, and then I'd probably say 2 and a 2. I mean, it's difficult. I would say 5 for the first 10 minutes, and then like 2 for the remaining like 70 or so. It just sort of hit a rut and just went on and on and on. Just going back to what you were saying before, I totally agree. I mean, there is a sort of Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas vibe. I mean, if you are familiar with drug culture and the sort of headspace of being on drugs, then this might connect to you a bit more. You might recognise more of this movie, but, like, you know, if not, then it's just going to be, like, just a bunch of people making funny faces. But I'm just kind of secretly hoping that the first segment of the film is put out there as a clip on YouTube so I can enjoy it.
There's something worth watching.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. One thing to say also in this Sophia Boutella interview, I mean, obviously this isn't reflective of the consensus, because this is quite easily Gasparnaui's best reviewed film ever. Mm-hmm. A lot of people love this movie, and apparently that really, like, he was really kind of shocked when he was found out that he was getting great reviews for this film.
See, I think that's not a bad thing in terms of, like, commercially great if he's going to get more people to see his film and make the next one, but it goes out to, like, ruffle feathers and to upset people and to create these diverse works.
Exactly.
I'm not sure that's doing him many favours, really. Like, it feels like he could have gone a lot nastier and pushed it a lot further, and that's the thing. It feels like an anticlimax because of what he sets up and what he actually delivers. You know, it's quite tame. I think I said sort of quite quippishly to my friend Tim, who I sat next to watching this in Cannes, I've had, like, bigger nights out than that, you know. It is not that extreme.
We'll have to wait for the Adam Woodward story on film to see that one. Anyway, thank you very much, guys. That was Climax. Good reviews and thorough. Up next, it's Film Club, and it's The Big Lebowski.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states.
United Healthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about United Healthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about United Healthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Not on the rug, man.
See what happens, Lebowski? You see what happens?
Nobody calls me Lebowski. You got the wrong guy. I'm the dude, man.
Your name's Lebowski, Lebowski. Your wife is Bunny.
My wife, Bunny? Do you see a wedding ring on my finger? Does this place look like I'm married? The toilet seat's up, man.
Woo?
Yeah.
Isn't this guy supposed to be a millionaire?
What is there left to say about The Big Lebowski? The Coen Brothers follow-up to the Oscar-winning hit Fargo turns 20 this year, and in the two decades since its release, where it was greeted with mixed reviews and a tepid box office taking, its stature has grown to iconic proportions. We're thrilled to welcome a special guest into the film club closet, Shyam Murugaya, artist. Welcome, Shyam. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you very much.
So there's a tidy link here, isn't there, Adam? So Little White Lies have worked on a book called Where's the Dude?
Yeah,
that, so you and Shyam have collaborated on.
Yeah, we're doing a few books with a publisher in the UK called Lawrence King. Mm-hmm. And one of them is, I guess, Shyam, you can describe it a bit better, but it's basically a riff on Where's Wally with the dude from The Big Lebowski. Yeah, it's the dude getting lost on different film sets, and I think we've got 12 altogether. Mm-hmm. And you've got to find him in as many places as possible. We've set up some dude decoys on each of the pages as well, so it's even more difficult to find him. We've also got 20 extra things to spot per illustration for each film. Mm. Yeah.
Fantastic. But let's talk about Big Lebowski. So, Shyam, what's your relationship with this film? Is this one you've watched many times?
Oh, wow. Did you watch it before you did the book?
Yeah. It's one of my favourite films. I'm a big Coen Brothers fan, and Inside Llewyn Davis is probably my favourite. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I've seen The Big Lebowski lots and lots of times. Yeah, I think I watched it when I was at university. Mm-hmm. And then anyone who came into my dorm room would be greeted with me telling them about this film. So I would, it would be a kind of initiation from my end.
It's such a university or sixth form sort of film, isn't it?
Very much so, yeah.
Very much in the key texts for any 16, 17, 18-year-old. Is that the same for you guys? Adam and David?
I've got to say, I can't really remember when I first watched it, but it must be the film of theirs I've watched the most. Mm-hmm. It's maybe not my favourite, but it's the rewatch value on this film is like incredibly high, I think.
I can never remember which was which, but either this or LA Confidential. It was the first 18 film that I like got into, on like just walked up to the box office and were like, Big Lebowski, please. and they gave me a ticket for it. And I remember it was like opening night and it was absolutely like packed. And I think I had to sit in the front row or something. Yeah, I think I was 16 when I saw it. Uh-huh. And I'm not sure I understood it. I remember finding it quite funny, but a lot of the humour and particularly the plot going straight over my head, which I guess is what happened to a lot of people. I mean, I think with this film, you have to sort of like take a few steps back from, and it's not just a sort of straight comedy. It's not like a Farrelly Brothers film with where you've got this kind of ripe comic character and he's just doing these funny scenes. There's a sort of bigger thing happening here, and he's sort of riffing on all these kind of L.A. noir films, and they love the books of James M. Cain and Dashiell Hammett, and it's sort of mixing a sort of hard-boiled detective novel with this sort of sunny stoner goofy comedy, and it's a magical mix. You kind of think maybe it shouldn't work. I think that's what makes the Coen brothers the Coen brothers, that they are able to kind of fuse these things together and make them tick.
Well, it's such a fascinating hodgepodge. They're taking Raymond Chandler tropes or a story there. It's a period movie as well. It's set in the early 90s, so it's a few years out of step with when it was released. But then also all the characters, you have this fascinating backstories about, they're all based on real people they came across on you. Like John Milius was the inspiration for Walter Sobchak. It's an outsized performance by John Goodman that's become almost as iconic as the dude itself.
Oh, absolutely.
I almost think, looking back and watching this film, it's almost like The Simpsons, where almost every scene gives you a quote or a line that pops up in everyday usage.
This, I think that is the simple beauty of the film. Every character, no matter how big or small or how much screen time they have, is given at least one or two iconic lines. That's the key, really. I mean, I think that's why it has its enduring appeal.
Including David Thewlis's video artist. What was his?
Oh, I'd forgotten him completely.
Oh, yes. But okay, maybe his wasn't... He didn't have a line, but his performance is so... It's just, you know, he's like...
Cackling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I find it fascinating going back and watching this now, and maybe Sean, the same for you. Like now that, cause Inside Llewyn Davis is my favourite Coen Brothers movie as well, especially this later period Coens, where they feel much more assured in what they're doing. To see them at this stage where they're throwing so much stuff into this film, almost an indulgent level. Not everything pays off rewatching it now. The plot in particular drags a little bit. What's it like watching it now?
It's nostalgic, I think, for me at the moment. I'm like, yeah, I am comparing it to all of the more recent Coen Brothers movies. I'm looking forward to the one on Netflix.
Oh, The Ballad of Buster Scruggs.
Yeah, I feel like that might be something along a similar line of lots of kind of crazy characters being thrown into the story. So, yeah, looking back, it's a nostalgic thing, but it's garnered so much love for me that I forget about some of its flaws.
Can we forgive its flaws now, Adam?
I think so. I mean, I'm not sure that... What are the flaws?
I think, well, personally, I do love the film, but watching it now, you know, the story is very overwritten,
right,
and very confusing, and you do have to actually step back and say, wait, what was the actual plot there? There's so much incident, so much character in every scene. There's somebody new or somebody, you know, on a dialogue level, that playing with the rhythm of similar sentences that recur throughout scenes that the Coen brothers do is just incredible. But looking back at Fargo, which we covered on Film Club a few months ago, which is so tight and captures a mood and character and a story, and then what they do later with even films that would come out fairly soon after this, like Oh Brother Where Art Thou, it just feels that they know exactly what they want to do, whereas with this there's a lot of loose threads which are very delightful.
I mean, it is a real like Shaggy Dog story, isn't it? And I think it's quite intentional, some of the red herrings and the diversions that you're kind of taken down, and it's just a wonderful like character piece, I think. You mentioned the Walter Sobchak character especially, and every time I return to the film, he's the one. I just think the fact they've taken this character who's made to be like a Vietnam War veteran, clearly suffering from like post-traumatic stress, but just they turn that into such a... I mean, it's very blackly comic, but it's just such a hilarious character trait. There's loads of fan theories around this film, but one of the most enduring ones is that the Donnie character is just a figment of Walter's imagination. Which I love that. I think it's like been disproven, and the Coens have even sort of poured water on it. But yeah, I think that's quite interesting.
Because they don't talk to Donnie, really. Yeah. Well, Walter says, "Shut the f*** up, Donnie," over and over. But the dude, I think, only communicates with him once or twice throughout the entire movie. It reminds me that there was a period in the 90s, maybe the 2000s, where just Vietnam was a punchline. Like, you have an old character maybe wearing an army surplus jacket saying, "I was in Nam," and that's a comic caricature. Whereas now, maybe there's a more sensitive portrayal or viewing of post-traumatic stress.
Yeah, but I wonder how this film would be received if it was made today. Or, I mean, it would probably be something should be like put out as a series or on Netflix, and then there'd be like spin-off. You know, Walter would get his own show, and I just think the purity of this film.
Well,
is it?
Well,
just,
there's a spin-off coming, Adam. Yeah. Do you know about this one?
Yeah, but this is the thing. It's like,
wait, what's the spin-off?
Well, Sham, you know the character of Jesus, played by John Turturro.
Oh yeah.
John Turturro has asked the Coens for permission to use that character in a film that he has written and directed. It's called Going Places, based on a bawdy 70s French movie
with Gerard Depardieu.
Yeah. The original, and Turturro's remaking it with Bobby Cannavale and Audrey Tautou, described as a crime comedy centred around a trio of sexually depraved misfits.
Yeah.
Well, I was reading about this, it sounds like it's going to be a very loose spin-off or a kind of riff on that character. But
because I think Turturro developed that character himself. Yeah,
It's very much like, I think that's what the Coens do, is they get these character actors in who they let kind of inhabit the character and sort of add their own spice to it. But if this was done today, it would have the inevitable, like, spin-off series, and I just think the purity of this film is so of its time, I guess, but so timeless as well, and you don't need to like add anything more or do anything more with it.
I think it's like the film where the Coens started to do their kind of undercutting their own narratives, and instead of having their films ending in a kind of way that you'd expect a film to end, they just sort of undercut everything, and they have these sort of weird slow fades as if to say all of that stuff that happened before was kind of pointless, and it just stopped rather than climaxed. Inside Llewyn Davis and like No Country for Old Men, it's like probably the best version of that kind of slow fade ending. Lebowski is just, even within their own canon, this is entirely unique. There's just nothing before or since. I mean, it just sits there. It's like an unidentified flying object. It's just like, you know, one of the films of theirs that I really love, and I gave a rewatch to this week, is Burn After Reading.
Right. Much maligned at the time. Or divisive
at
the time.
One of their biggest commercial hits. Mm-hmm. But it's a film that's so kind of like knowing and so sort of, you know, almost sort of feels like, you know, it's this a beautifully put together, beautifully written film that is meant to feel like a kind of throwaway, all this stuff that happened was for nothing kind of thing. It was all for nothing.
I think that is like one of the best films I experiences having in the cinema, watching that. Because I was probably a bit too young for when The Big Lebowski first came out. But yeah, Burn After Reading, I think that is them doing like proper comedy. And I think the bit where the Tilda Swinton character, where you find out she's just a paediatrician, is like one of the funniest reveals. But they do that all the time. They just subvert your expectations and almost like lampoon their own style and their own, like, the way they kind of write and present characters is brilliant.
The Brad Pitt character in that movie as well, playing against
Chad
type. Yeah, exactly.
Amazing. He's incredible in that film. There's just scenes of him sat in a car. He's like staking out John Malkovich's house, and he's just sort of like body popping in the car with his little Apple headphones in it. It's just really funny. And the best scene is with J.K. Simmons as the head of the CIA. He was being told what's happening by one of his kind of flunkies, and he just sort of can't quite get his head around the stupidity. It's funny because I think a lot of people think the Coens are quite sort of cynical people, and, you know, they're quite down on people in general. Like, you know, their films are about human stupidity, about morons. But back to Lebowski, I think that, you know, there's something quite kind of humane about it as well. It's quite a kind of empathetic film. It's one that's sort of has a love of these kind of kooky characters. Sorry to use the word kooky.
Kooky, right.
Eccentrics.
Oh, maybe we can bleep that
down
one.
Down-home eccentrics. Yeah, bleep the word.
It's a bit of a bonus film club there on Burn After Reading as well. Is that what we'd recommend people go to straight after Big Lebowski?
They make a nice double bill. I think they're essentially the same movie, just in different settings.
Rewatching this, and this film comes out at just on the edge of my perception. I was just a bit too young, like Adam, to watch it at the time. But then growing up through my teenage years, seeing films that came out around 97, 98 with similar scuzzy depictions of LA, maybe a smart aleck take on genre like Lost Highway, Boogie Nights and Jackie Brown, and this.
Kiss, Bang, Bang.
Well, a few years later, Kiss, Kiss, Bang, Bang. Exactly. I think those, it'd be great to do a marathon of those, and then you'll never want to go to Los Angeles again.
Well, there's actually another film coming out next year, I think, which was in Cannes, called Under the Silver Lake.
Exactly, yes.
Which was, again, a very divisive film. I quite liked it.
I loved it, yeah.
But it's another kind of weird, eccentric LA noir that, you know, feels like the director, David Robert Mitchell, who did it, he'd definitely gone through The Big Lebowski a couple of times, I think, at least. And Ace Ventura, Pet Detective.
The most recent film I've seen that has similar vibes to this would be Inherent Vice.
Yeah.
Some of the more eccentric characters in that and the lead performance from Joaquin Phoenix. I guess they're not as funny, some of the characters in that movie, mm-hmm. but it follows a kind of similar trait.
Oh, yeah, definitely. The Josh Brolin character in that.
Oh, God.
Yeah, he's fantastic.
He is like a Walter Sojak. Yeah, but he's kind of gone slightly the other way. Mm-hmm. Like, he's like stayed in the service and stayed in the force. And,
Let's just wrap up Big Lebowski. Sean, thank you so much for joining us. Where can people find your work and more about you?
You can find my work on murugaya.com. Mm-hmm. And if you type my name into any search engine, you should be able to find lots of my work. And the book comes out very soon. Do we have
a... Yeah, Where's the Dude is out on the 24th of September. Right. And it's available in all good bookshops.
And I've heard about this thing coming up soon after that called Christmas. And I think those two happenings could fit together quite nicely.
Nice double bill there. Yes. Crossover. Well, David, thank you very much for joining me. And Adam as well. And Sham, what's happening next week? I think we have The Wife and Skate Kitchen. And Film Club next week is a classic erotic thriller, Fatal Attraction, to tie in with Glenn Close, Then and Now, because she also appears in The Wife. Any final comments, chaps?
Yeah, one of the other releases that's out this week, which just might be worth giving a very, very quick name check to, is the film Faces Places by Agnès Varda. Mm-hmm. She's a kind of veteran of French cinema, one of the sort of founding mothers of the new French New Wave. She's, I think, 90 now. So this could well be her swan song, but it's a really kind of lovely, life-affirming documentary about looking at the French landscape and, you know, the constellations of art. And it has this amazing ending involving her trying to meet Jean-Luc Godard, who's her old pal from the 50s. So, yeah, would recommend, because I think we were pretty down on both the films this week. Mm-hmm. So I think getting in there with a recommendation of maybe something you should see, heartily recommend Faces Places.
Which is out this week as well.
Yes.
Perfect. And if you want to let us know what you think of the films we've discussed or any other films we haven't discussed, or Donald Gleeson or The Dude, you can do so at Elderly Lies on Twitter, truthandmovies@tcolondon.com via email, or on the comments section at elderlylies.com/podcast. Thanks once again, guys, for joining me today. I've been Michael Leader, and this, as always, has been a 7 Digital production.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Spin your passion into a business with Shopify and break sales records with the world's best converting checkout. Let's hear that one more time. The world's best converting checkout. Shopify's legendary checkout makes it easier for customers to shop on your website, across social media, and everywhere in between. Now that's music to your ears. Any way you spin it, you can be a smash hit with Shopify. Start your $1 a month trial today at shopify.com/records.